Welcome to another edition of Time for Forgiveness, the show that not only teaches you how to forgive, but also gives you compelling guests who share their stories on how they found the path to forgiveness. Now, please welcome your hosts. Here are Kelly and Bob Pascuzzi.
Welcome to another powerful episode of Time for Forgiveness, getting you on the path to freedom through forgiveness. I'm Sean Parr, your host, with our incredible co-hosts, Bob and Kelly Pascuzzi. And Kelly, I'm so excited about our special guest today. Why don't you introduce her?
I am as well. And I just want to take a moment and read something to our audience so everyone can kind of get familiar with Amity. Almost 5.5 years after a shotgun destroyed half her face and damaged her sight, Amity Dewey's nose sagged like a glove without a hand, loose and empty. She wanted a new nose, needed a new nose just to improve her breathing. So she was on her way to Ann Arbor for another operation, the 20th since the shooting. Legally blind, she was riding with her aunt. This was one day after the U.S. recorded its 400th mass shooting of the year. Every day she lives with the consequences of gun violence. But Amity had mentioned, you know, very few want to talk about it. And I think what's something maybe we all need to think about it is that it's just easier not to talk about it. And so I just, before we even start this conversation, I just want to commend you. It takes a lot of courage and bravery to come on and share your story. And I'd like you to open up and start where you'd like.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I guess really where it all began, my mother remarried. I didn't very much know him very well at all. We moved up north. It was pretty quick. Things kind of got a little, how should I put it? Inappropriate. He was becoming very inappropriate with me. And when I noticed that, I started to shy away. Excuse me. When he was picking us up from the airport, he had a 12 gauge, safety unlock or safety off, fully loaded. Hidden under the tarp there and hidden under the mat of the vehicle in the way back of the trunk, hidden under all of my stuff because I was still moving to Midland. I still had quite a few stuff there. And so I didn't understand why he drove down with that. But now it made sense. His mistress threatened to kill herself because, it's out there. She wouldn't respond to him. So, I mean, this is what anybody would think. Okay, my mistress killed herself. My wife is divorcing me. And I'm going to have nothing to my name. When we got to the airport, like I said, in the airplane, I've always had weird things happen to me. I don't know how to explain it. Not like same thing, but just like a presence and like just something that is there, but not like a physical type thing, kind of like a spiritual. Well,
maybe like a premonition.
Yeah. I mean, could be. People are like, hey, I have this gut, this gut instinct. And I'm like, listen to it, listen to it.
Yeah.
Because on that plane, I asked my mom, I was like, do you think, cause this was her third marriage. And I go, do you think you'd ever get married again? And she said, no. And that just broke my heart. And she was doing her crossword puzzle. I was reading my book. And then this voice just came in my head. Tell your mother you love her and tell her you're sorry for being such a rotten child. I mean, exactly those words. So I was mouthy. I mean, I definitely got her mouth. But so I told her. And she laughs. She goes, oh, honey, you're not a rotten child. She goes, mouthy, but not rotten. and that I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. You take your time.
I've never really got emotional about talking about this. So the whole time we were on the plane ride, about 2 hours, we just kind of sat there. I read my book. After I said that, she kind of, she just did her crossword puzzle and she would date it like she always would. And then when we landed, we had to search the whole place, whole place for our luggage. It got lost. I just kept thinking, maybe I should call my brother. My whole body was just like, don't get in the car. But again, I trusted my mom. She said everything was fine. She told me not to call my brother. She said that, you know, and my stepfather was very, very insistent. As soon as I got in the car, I saw the coolers. I saw the alcohol, and I was just kind of like, here we go. You know, here we go. And I was on the phone with my guardian. And as soon as I got in the back seat behind my mom, I told her, the air is so thick in here. I go, you can just cut it with a knife. Mm. I mean, it was, oh, man. And then, I mean, he didn't even put it in drive before my mom just went off. She went off. She was hurt. She was betrayed. She just. Yeah. Well, we're driving and all of a sudden he starts accusing me and I'm just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm in the back seat on my phone being completely quiet. Like, I just want to get home, you know, like I just want to get out of this car with you. But it was very, very brutal accusations. And I'm like, and he's threatening like these accusations will take me to prison. And I'm like, what? I didn't do anything. It was all adult stuff I didn't even know about. You know, I mean, freshly 18. I don't know anything about taxes or what, blah, blah, blah. I don't know that. And so I got scared. Yeah, I got mad. So, of course, you know, I'm going to stick up for myself. And I did. And him and I, he accused me of something really, just something so heinous I would never do. And he said he had proof. And I said, okay, well, where? And he never showed it to me. And I laughed. And I said, there you go. And so between me and my mom going at him, he, you know, so like I said, you know, knowing his mistress, thinking she has committed suicide, knowing his wife is going to leave him. So it's kind of like blowing up a balloon. So mom and I, we kept like blowing that balloon up as it was already full to max. And we just kept putting more and more air in there, more and air. And he snapped. And I believe what made him snap, he was yelling at me and I told him, I said, hey, listen, I was just like, you're crazy. Like, and I screamed it. I said, you're effing crazy. and he was like, he goes, yeah, you want to see crazy? I go, yeah, show us crazy. Little did I know. Now, when people say, it happens in the blink of an eye or a split second. It does. Because when he got out of the car and everything was, you know, and I was the first one hit, I mean, literally, it happened in a blink of an eye. And I didn't know what was happening. It took me a while to realize that I actually did pass out when he initially shot me, because I didn't hear him shoot my mother or himself. Because if he would have saw me alive, you know, he would have shot again, is what, you know, the cops, you know, we were all thinking. So when I came to, I looked at the time records, and it was probably like, I don't quite know, it was a little bit, but I woke up and, oh my goodness, my whole stomach was just, everything came up. And my ears were ringing and my vision was black. And I'm just like, okay, what am I going to do? So two things. I need to get help. Well, my first thought actually was, there's no way I'm going to allow him to kill me. No way. But no, he's put me through so much crap. He's not going to get the win. He's not going to get the last say. And I'm a very stubborn woman. And so when I put my mind to something, or when I say, you know, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And especially if you tick me off. And so I tried to grab my phone, not realizing at the time my roof of my mouth was split completely in half. My teeth were shattered. Whole upper teeth were shattered. And I didn't know that. I mean, I felt no pain. I was going off shock and adrenaline. So I grabbed my phone and I tried to use Siri to call 911, because actually the last thing that I ever saw with my sight is I was leaned over in the back seat. And when my mom said, you know, he has a gun, or, you know, Amy, get back in the car. I don't quite remember what she said, but. And when I did, I looked at my phone and I dialed 911, and I went to go hit the call. But I looked over my shoulder, and that's when he got me. And actually, by me looking over my shoulder is what saved my life. If I did not look over my shoulder when I did, he would have got completely the whole back of my head.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Especially with it being like 3 inches from me. the distance it was, the officers say, I'd take a door off its hinges. I mean, it should have, I mean, it, if you look at a gunshot or a 12 gauge slug, like from maybe like, I mean, a good distance, it still blows the person way back. And so the impact of that, just the bullet waves, I mean, yeah, science can't explain it. And then I blacked out. Well, when I got my phone back, I actually realized I was on 911 for a full minute. Why they didn't send anybody, I have no idea. How they did not hear the gunshot blast, I have no idea. That's just kind of something that I'll be, you know, never, just always questioned. I don't quite know. But with the help of other people, I was able, 911 was able to come. But that just kind of always confused me a bit. When he got me, when I woke up, I just needed to get help. So the phone didn't work. I climbed in the front seat and I tried to, because I was on the side of I-96. So I'm like, you know, even though it's like 9 whatever, you know, I can hear the traffic. Like I regained my hearing. The ringing finally died down, but my vision was still completely black. And so I'm like, okay. So I went in the front seat, not knowing how much blood I'm losing, not knowing the damage to my face. I just was determined to get help. And so I tried to like flash the lights and I was honking the horn, and just something told me, this isn't working. This isn't working. You got to get out. So I'm like, okay. So I climbed back in the back seat. I got out of my door, on passenger side, back door. And I started walking along the car to feel. And at this moment, I don't really know what was going through my head. I guess it really was just to get help. I knew the severity of it, but at the same time, I mean, my body was, it couldn't do what I was trying to make it to do. I was walking to the highway. I was trying to get as close as I could by hearing without actually almost getting hit. and so the first time I almost collapsed. And so I said, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. I tried my best. And so I got back in the car. I laid down. And that same voice. Get up. You're not dying this way. You have your whole life ahead of you. Get up. It just kept screaming that in my head. So I'm like, you know what? This isn't me. I don't quit. So I got up again. I got out of the car again. And I got so close to the highway this time that I felt a wind from a semi. And that dang near blew me on my butt. And that's when I knew I can't. I've literally done everything I could. I can't keep doing this. I felt my body just the cold. I felt the terrible cold. And I felt just anything and everything. And so when I laid back down in the car, I laid in the back seat. I had my arm. I was laying on my arm, and I knew I was looking at the back seat, but I still had no sight. And my last thought was, "This is how I'm going to die." I was thinking of my best friend. I was thinking of my dad. I was thinking of my grandma, of my grandma's, you know, my brothers. Like, how are they going to handle this? But I couldn't fight anymore. I tried. And so when I passed back out again. And what I remember is I heard the officer say there's two dead bodies. And that's when I started screaming. I mean, it sounded like just a gurgling, but I tried. The only thing I had left was my voice, you know, and the officer, like, what I remember him saying is, like, you know, there's a girl. And I'm like, yeah, I'm right here. You know, like, in my head, I'm like, I'm here. Help me. And so I remember him asking me if I could walk, and then I went to go stand up, but he grabbed my arm really, really hard, and he was like, no, and then so I sat back down, and then I remember blunt force trauma to the face, that's what he said, and I just remember looking at him like, what? No, you're funny. And then I remember climbing into the ambulance. I flopped myself on the bed. I remember them cutting my clothes. And I got so angry because I was wearing my brand new Bahama shirt with actually my senior apparel on too. So I was like, no, you're cutting off my clothes. And like, it's things you think of. I mean, you know. But I didn't realize that it was not salvageable at all. So.
Amity, you're not in pain, and I don't mean to interrupt, but are you not feeling a lot of pain at that point?
No.
So you're still feeling that adrenaline, and you're just still in shock.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. The doctors, I mean, as soon as I got to the hospital, they worked 14 hours on trying to put me back together. I believe one of the doctors said that it was like erasing half my face, I think. I actually learned quite a bit from this article, too, that I didn't even know. Jeff was telling me, like, what the cops actually, I mean, they said what I remember, but, like, there was a lot more to it that I didn't remember. And so from the cop, when he initially came, I was still passed out. And so he thought I was dead, but I don't know what happened, but I came to, and he said he saw my arm go up, in the back seat. And that's when he was like, oh my gosh, she's alive. And so, you know, they immediately called the ambulance and everything, but, the doctors, I mean, they were literally telling each other as they were putting me back together, like, she's not going to survive the night. There's no way. She's not. There's no way. But they couldn't tell my father that. Because, you know, they were still working on me. So my dad got the call around 6 a.m. or like 5 or 6 that Sunday of January 7th. He immediately drove down to Grand Rapids. He was by my side the entire time. He was there for me. He made sure whatever I needed, I got. He made sure whatever I wanted, if I could, you know, get it. And I love him. But anyways, so my dad came and. Oh no! You can go ahead.
So is that correct that you've had a total of 20 surgeries to date?
I've had well over 20.
Well over.
And it's been about 6 years. July will be 6 and a half.
Mm. Wow.
Yep. Yeah, so it's been a long process. Like I actually am going to talk about my reconstructive surgeon on another surgery. because I'm not very happy just with this, if they give me, you know, I don't know, just do something with it. But yeah, and he, you know, he's told me, you know, I'll work on you until you're happy. But that last surgery in July, that really hit me. and with stress, you know, I get chronic pain pretty good. Mm-hmm. And with both my ribs, bone graft ribs being removed, one from my right and one from my left, I'll get these pains where, I don't really know how to explain it. It'll feel like, I can't breathe. I mean, like every time I would try and inhale, a shooting pain would go up either my left side or my right side. And it'd be right where, you know, they took the bone graft from. And so, I mean, I've been in class and I've just right to the floor and my boyfriend's like, oh my gosh, you know, he's kind of freaked out. And, you know, I mean, earlier this week it happened, you know, we're on spring break. He had Monday through Wednesday off and Monday he, I was just, we were in my room listening to music and I was just, you know, dancing around, just trying to relieve some stress and whatnot. And then I just, boom, I fell to the floor. Mm-hmm. And my boyfriend, like, he, you know, got up and was like, oh, my God. And, like, I was holding my side and he saw my face was getting really, really red and because I couldn't breathe. But that usually happens for, like, I don't know, 20 to 30 seconds. I push through. I mean, it's not fun.
What do the doctors say, Amity?
Chronic pain.
Chronic pain? There's nothing they can do about that? No. Wow.
And I don't want any opioids. I don't want any
Yeah.
Right.
Nope.
So, Amity, can I ask you a question?
Of course.
You've went through all this trauma and pain and by, you know, I just want to acknowledge how, you know, you being so vulnerable and coming on and sharing your story, you know, this, everything you've been through, at this point in your life, how do you look at and decide what the meaning of all of this is at this point in your life? How would you answer that?
It's made me a better person, in a lot of aspects.
That's really
good. Before the incident, I was very selfish. I was very vain. I was a mean girl. not proud of it. And then after the incident, it's like the coin flipped. I went from pretty girl to, you know, and what did my mother always call it? A reality slap or something like that.
reality check?
Yeah, reality check.
There you go.
Yeah, she'd always say that because she'd always be like, "Oh, when these girls get out of high school, you know, they're gonna, you know, the real world's gonna hit them." And yeah, I mean, I was still in high school, but definitely was a changer. I was getting negative attention. I was not getting positive attention. Mm-hmm. It was very hard. But like I said, it's made me more humble. It's made me actually think before I speak. Mm-hmm. I had a really bad issue with that. And just my personality overall. I mean, I have a best friend. We've been best friends for over a decade. I mean, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. 15 years we've been best friends. Mm-hmm. And I asked her if I've changed, and she... I love her. She's like, "Oh goodness, girl." She goes, "You've changed so much for the better. I am more humble, and I am definitely don't want people to go through what I went through. I don't want them not to feel like they don't have a voice. I don't want them to feel like they're trapped like I was."
Yeah. Amity, I have a lot of questions for you, if you don't mind me going back. First of all, I love your light. You are such an ambitious, beautiful, wonderful spirit, and it exudes here today. And I just hope everybody listening and watching is feeling what I feel, mm-hmm. Because that is radiating from you, and I love that. But I have several questions as we go back for just a moment, because I just want to know you. You're so strong, and oh my gosh, the way you told your story and the strength that you showed. And you couldn't see, your vision was black, and you're going from the front seat to the back seat to the side of the road. And when you said the big rig, I could feel that air go across my face.
Yeah.
At what point, because you were so brave, because you didn't understand what had happened to you, at what point did Amity say, when you were in the hospital, when these doctors are doing all these surgeries, at what point did you realize this is really serious? This is bigger than I thought.
About a month to a month and a half.
And you can't see at that point at all?
No, I started. So they tried to fix my left eye. But I mean, you know, like I said, I had people explain it to me, and they said it's like a dried up fish, or, you know, fish eye. And I knew what that looked like. You know, like I said, I was a very avid hunter. I fish, you know, I hunt, I shot guns, you know, bows, anything and everything.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, ugh, you know, like, ew. Well, actually, I mean, it caused me a lot of pain. So they took it out. I noticed right after they took out my left eye, my vision slowly started getting some back in my right. It was about 3 weeks, and I still thought that I was going to go back to Midland. I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to recover, because they're talking about, like, me moving again, like me living with my dad. And I'm like, well, wait, what? No, I'm going back to school. What are you talking about? I'm fine. Yeah.
Had you seen yourself, Amity? At that point, had you seen yourself? No.
Nope. At that point, all I could tell was when lights were on and off. Actually, no, I couldn't tell that, because I told them to keep the lights on just to know that I wasn't in dark. It made me feel safe. I remember that, because they'd always ask me, would you like the lights off? And I said, no, keep them on, please. As I was doing my mobility, you know, walking, getting my strength back, I walked down the corridors and I started noticing door frames in photos. And I'm like, no way. No, this isn't real. Like, what? And I still couldn't see enough to bathe myself, stuff like that. I was still very, very weak. Well, then when I went back to DeVos, my brother and sister-in-law were in there. And my brother had a red shirt on with Ferris. And I started to see movement, and I started to see figures. So this was probably about a month in. and it's about the end of January. And so I started seeing figures, the light fixture, I could tell when the light was on and off. And then all of a sudden my brother walks at the end of my bed and I look up and I go, "Do you have a red shirt on?" And my brother goes, "Yeah." Mm. And like, wow. We all just like, "Oh my goodness."
Yeah.
We just got so excited. And cause that was my first color ever seen since, you know, and I'm just like, "Oh," and I started crying. We started crying.
Wow.
It was such a great thing, but yeah, it was probably about a month in that I realized, yeah, I can't go back to my old life.
What were the medical personnel, the doctors, what were they communicating to you? Or were they just like, we're going to wait till she asks? Or, you know, how are they handling that situation at that time?
Well, they were very, they actually didn't know how to proceed. They have never had a case like that.
I would hope not, right? Right. Yeah.
Yes, I'm very happy, yes. and so they didn't know what to do. I had a different reconstructive surgeon every week. I kind of scared the nurses, not meaning to. I mean, I think it's funny, but hey, whatever. So this surgery, I mean, the person's usually average bedridden at least 3 days after. Yeah, no, not me. I got up that next day. And the nurse was like, no. I said, "I'm walking whether you help me or not. I need to get out of this bed." Literally 12-hour surgery the day before. And the next day I'm up and walking because I had to. I couldn't lay in that bed. I don't know what. Again, I don't know. So I walked up and down the hallway for like 5 minutes and the nurse was like, "Okay, sweetie, please can you go lay back down?" And I was like, "Okay."
You know, Amity, one of the things that really caught my attention in the article, and I think it's important we talk about it because you look different than you did before. And massively. People notice, people are curious. And I had read in the article where, you know, you see parents hushing their children, like, "Don't ask." And there was a young girl that actually asked you, you know, "What happened to your eye?" And you had responded like, "Thank God somebody asked." I would love if you would go there for a moment.
Yeah, of course. So I've actually had quite a few little ones come up to me. but that was the most recent that I could remember. Yeah. So in the very, very beginning, when I had like my trach in my throat, the trumpets in my nose, you know, just this was all open. You know, I go out in public and I'd get a lot of stares. Well, at the time it bothered me, but I'm like, you know, they're kids. They don't understand. And by their parents shushing them, they're making, what's the word? I don't want to say ignorant because people think that's a bad word, but it really isn't. You know, ignorant just means you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, you know, society, whatever, has made that word like, "Oh, you're stupid." No. So I like to use the word ignorant because, you know, you can't do that to a child. I mean, they're not going to understand.
Right. Mm.
And then they're going to get confused and you just need to clarify. And so in the beginning, when the kids would come up to me, I've noticed the main thing is they don't ask why I have an eye. And so it took me a little bit to figure out what to say without scaring them. And so, a very bad man hurt me. I go, "But he can't hurt me anymore. He's gone." I go, "So we're all safe now." Mm. I was like, "But I lost it. And sadly, I'm not going to get it back." And they're just like, "Okay." And then they want me to play with them.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's that simple. It really is that simple.
But I appreciate you talking about it because I think it's uncomfortable and then people don't know what to say. So they don't say anything. And then they, like you said, hush their children and then there's confusion. But you actually were glad somebody did ask you.
Oh, yes, I am. Because, you know, I believe, you know, they're children. The curiosity is everywhere, you know. And, of course, you know, I'm different. You know, I look different than a normal, you know, person in society. And so, you know, I'm okay with getting on their level, you know, and explaining it to them. Mm-hmm. But there, I will say, though, there are some people that do get offended by people asking. I'm not one of them, obviously, but I have heard stories of other people. But no, I strongly believe that if your kid asks a question, just like that grandmother, well, why don't you go ask her? You know, the little girl, she's so cute. She had a cute little sundress on. Her hair was in pink. She was adorable. So, you know, we're in the bathroom, you know, like you were saying. And I mean, that just made me so happy. You know,
do you feel like that has been healing for you on your journey? Just to talk about it.
Yes.
Amity, you're 24, right?
Yep.
So you're 24 years old, and it's been a while since this incident happened to you. And you've walked us through this incredible journey and the strength that you have shown the entire time. Where are you today? Where are you? How many more surgeries do you? I mean, you've had countless surgeries, but are there more surgeries in your future? And where are you mentally today, right this minute?
Mentally, I am better than what I was. I mean, you know, I'm going to college, you know, I'm getting myself out there. Whereas I was kind of like a recluse, you know, I didn't want to socialize. I didn't really want to go anywhere. But no, I feel like with this article and everything, this has become such a good healing for me. Because all the personal responses I'm getting from people, I mean, I can't tell you that when that article came out that first week, I was happy crying, then sad crying. And oh my gosh, it was crazy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. An emotional roller coaster, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So is your intent, I think you had shared, is as you're in schooling, you'd like to get into some kind of counseling and help people that have experienced trauma. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm getting my psychology degree and I would like to become a trauma therapist.
Mm, wow.
How amazing is that if with everything that you have been through and continue to go through, by the way. But I'm going to go back to something you mentioned earlier. Happy, dancing, boyfriend. And, you know, before you obviously felt the chronic pain in your ribs, and anybody that's ever had a rib injury immediately winces when you say that, because that is unbearable pain that yeah. will drop you to your knees. But you are so incredibly brave. And this journey has been so eye-opening for a lot of people that I'm sure have gone through trauma that are listening right now and say, How is she so okay right now? How is she so out there? And so your spirit, like I said earlier, your light is, you're you. But let me just say one more thing. The selfish, the vain Amity, gone. And now the one thing that you said that will stick with me forever, a coin flip can happen in a minute.
Yep. Whole life can change yeah. in a matter of a flip.
Amity, how can people reach out to you?
I have a Facebook. It's just, that's pretty much all I got.
That's okay.
Facebook, like my, email, whatever.
Okay. But on your Facebook, where would we turn to?
For what?
Just if people want to send you a message of inspiration and thank you for all that you provided them and your spirit and your challenges and things like that.
Oh, yeah. No, they can just message me. I love hearing from people. I mean, it. Like I said, you know, happy tears, you know. I mean, this one woman, she inspired me. You know, she's 68, has been through, oh, goodness, tragedy after tragedy. And just hearing my story, and she said how young I was, you know, she's like, I need to get up. You know, she's like, I need to get my life in order. And it's like, that makes me so happy.
Yeah. I have a t-shirt that I want you, when you said the words, get up, it's just shocked me. It was like you punched me in the chest and said, hey, whatever you got going on in your life, I made it. You can do this. You can find the strength to do anything, but you got to get up. And you did. And you continue to get up every day, and you continue.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you know, it's not easy. You know, some days are worse than others.
But, obviously.
You know, like I said, yeah, you know, like I said, you know, I'm very grateful to have my grandmother. You know, I got my puppy named Lola.
Hi, Lola.
She's messing with Hutch.
But thank you, Amity, for being such a special part of what we do here at Time for Forgiveness. Like I said, we want to follow you. We want to keep in contact with you. You're very special. And continue to shine your light because it is bright.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amity.
Wow, what an exciting episode. Thank you so much for listening and for watching Time for Forgiveness. Hey, listen, visit our website at timeforforgiveness.org. And here's the great news. You can now download our workbook. Just click on the QR code. It's that simple. You can also message us on our website because we read every single message and we certainly love to help. You can also reach us on our socials on Instagram and Facebook. And you can email us again at info@timeforforgiveness.org. I'm Sean Parr for Bob and Kelly Pascuzzi. We'll see you next time on Time for Forgiveness.